Forensics had swarmed over the despite, stripping the records from the automatic surveillance equipment, searching every compartment, questioning every survivor, examining all the bodies in the ship's morgue. Esme could only imagine that search from the questions they asked each day. First, with no visual cues at all, when they asked her to explain, moment by moment, where she had been and what she had seen, heard, and done when Captain Hearn took the ship away from Xavier. Later, with a 3D display of the ship, they led her through it again. Exactly where had she been? Facing which way? When she said she saw Captain Hearn the last time, where was Hearn, and what had she been doing? Esme had never been good at this sort of thing. She found out quickly that she had apparently perjured herself already. She could not, from where she remembered she'd been sitting, have seen Lieutenant Commander Forrester come out of the cross corridor the way she'd said. It was, the interrogator pointed out, physically impossible to see around corners without special instruments. Had she had any? No. But her specialty had been scan. Was she sure she had not rigged something up? And again here, lines of her earlier testimony moved down the monitor alongside the image of the ship. Could she explain how she had gotten from her own quarters back here all the way forward and down two decks in only 15 seconds? Because there was a clear picture of her, she recognized herself with familiar distaste, in the access corridor to the forward portside battery at 18:30:15, when she had insisted she was in her own quarters for the 18:30 duty report.
I have no idea.
Esme had made a habit of being in her quarters for that duty report. It had meant that she didn't have to linger in the junior officer's wardroom and join the day's gossip, or make her report with the others. Surely she would have done so even more readily with the rumors then sweeping the ship. She didn't like rumors. Rumors got you in trouble. People fought over rumors, and then were in more trouble. She hadn't known that Captain Hearn was a traitor. Of course she hadn't. But she had had an uneasy feeling in the pit of her stomach, and she had tried not to think about it. Not until she'd been dragged through it again did she remember that someone had paged her and told her to come initial the daily scan log of the warhead lockers. Checking the automatic scans had been part of her daily routine. She'd insisted that she had done it, and whoever it was had insisted she hadn't. And finally, she'd gone down to see. Who had called her? She didn't remember. And what had she found when she got there?
I'd made an error entering the scan code. At least, I guess that's what it was.
What do you mean?
Well, the number was wrong. Sometimes that happened, but usually it wouldn't enter. It would signal a conflict.
Explain, please.
Yes, sir. You see, during my rotation, I've entered many scan log codes, probably thousands. I'll admit I've made mistakes, but when that happens, the coder generally locks and refuses entry. On rare occasions in the past, the coder has accepted the incorrect code. When the next shift came on and compared the code to mine, the coder would hang up on them. Then they called me and I'd have to come myself and reset the code and initial the change. That must be what happened.
I see. And from what station did you make the 1830 report then?
Esme had no idea. Going from her quarters, she could see the route clearly in her mind, but she could not remember calling in. Yet, if she hadn't, someone would have logged it. Except that was when, up on the bridge, the mutineers made their move against Captain Hearn. Sometime around then, anyway.
I don't know that I did. I don't remember that I didn't. I got to the weapons bay, reset the codes, initialed them, and came back to my quarters. And then...
By then, the mutiny had spread beyond the bridge, and the senior mutineers had sent someone down to keep the juniors out of it if they could. That hadn't worked. There had been more traitors than that. The investigator nodded shortly and went on to something else. To a series of somethings else. Finally, over many sessions, they worked their way up to the time when she herself was in charge. Could she explain her decision to return to the Xavier system and try to fight a battle against odds with no senior officers and substantial casualties? Only briefly and obliquely had she allowed herself to think of her decision as heroic. Reality wouldn't let her dwell on it. She hadn't known what she was doing. Her inexperience had caused too many deaths. Even though it came out all right in the end, in one way, it was not all right for those who had died. If it wasn't heroic, what was it? It looked stupid now, foolhardy. Yet her crew, despite her inexperience, had blown away the enemy flagship.
I remembered Commander Serrano. I had to come back after sending a message, so in case...
Gallant, but hardly practical. You're a protege of Commander Serrano.
No.
Not a, particular friend?
Esme barely kept herself from snorting. What did he think she was, some prude off a backcountry planet that didn't know one sex from the other? That could not call things by their right names?
No. We were not lovers. We were not friends. She was a major, command track. I was an ensign, technical track. It's just that she was polite.
Others weren't?
Not always. I'm not from a fleet family. I'm from Altiplano, the first person from Altiplano to attend the academy.
Altiplano, yes. That is a planet where the ageist influence is particularly strong, isn't it?
Ageists?
Esme scrambled through what she knew of politics at home. She had not been home since she was 16, and came up with nothing.
I don't think anyone in Altiplano hates old people.
No, no. Ageists. Surely you know. They oppose rejuvenation.
Oppose rejuvenation? Why?
How closely do you follow events on Altiplano?
I don't.
Esme had left it behind gladly. She had discarded, without watching, the News Cube subscription her family sent her. She had finally decided, in the bleak aftermath of a nightmare in which she was not only stripped of her commission but sentenced to a term of hard labor, that she would never go back to Altiplano, no matter what. They could throw her out of fleet, but they couldn't make her go home. She had looked it up. No judicial action could force someone to return to their planet of origin for crimes committed somewhere else.
And I can't believe they really oppose rejuvenation. At least, I can't imagine anyone I know thinking that way.
Oh?
Since he seemed interested, the first person in years who had shown any interest at all, Esme found herself telling him about Papa Stefan, Sani, Bertol, and the rest, at least insofar as it bore on their likely attitude towards rejuve.
And is your family, prominent on Altiplano?
My father's a regional commander in the militia. The ranks aren't equivalent, but there are only four regional commanders on Altiplano.
And you chose to go into fleet. Why?
Esme had dealt with that in her first application, and during the entrance interviews, and the military psychology classes as well. She rattled off the explanation that had always seemed to go best, and it sank into the investigator's unresponsive gaze.
Is that all?
Well, yes.
The smart young officer did not talk about wish fulfillment, the hours she'd spent in the manor orchard staring up at the stars and promising herself she'd be there someday. Better to be matter-of-fact, practical, sensible. No one wanted wild-eyed dreamers, fanatics, especially not from worlds that had only a couple of centuries of human colonization.
I loved the thought of going into space.
Esme felt herself flushing, the telltale heat on her face and neck. She hated her fair skin that always showed her emotions. The interrogator touched his stylus to his datapad.
Well, Lieutenant, that will be all.
For now, his look said. It could not be the end of questioning. That wasn't how things worked. Esme said nothing except the polite formula he expected and went back to her temporary quarters. She had not realized until the second or third shift aboard the flagship that only she, of the young mutineers, had a private compartment. She wasn't sure why, since there were three other women, all crammed into one compartment. She'd have been happy to share. Well, not happy, but willing. But the Admiral's orders left no room for argument, as Esme found when she asked the officer assigned as their keeper if she could change the arrangement. He'd looked disgusted and told her no so firmly that her eardrums rattled. So, she had privacy if she wanted it. She could lie on her bunk, someone else's bunk, but hers for the duration, and remember, and try to think. She didn't really like either, not alone. She had the kind of mind that worked best alongside others, striking sparks from her own and others' intransigence. Alone, it whirred uselessly, recycling the same thoughts over and over. But the others did not want to talk about what bothered her. No, that was not quite honest. She did not want to talk to them about those things either. She did not want to talk about how she felt when she saw the first casualties of the mutiny. How the smell of blood and scorched decking affected her. How it brought back memories she had hoped were gone forever.
War isn't clean anywhere, Esme.
Her father had said that. When she'd told him she wanted to go into space, wanted to become a fleet officer.
Human blood and human guts smell the same. Human cries sound the same.
She had said she knew it. She had thought she knew it. But those hours in the orchard, looking up at the distant stars, clean light on clean darkness, she had hoped for something better. Not security, no. She was too much her father's child to wish for that. But something clean-edged, the danger sharpened by vacuum and weapons that vaporized. She had been wrong, and now she knew it in every reluctant cell of her body.
Esme?
Esme glanced at the timer and sat up hurriedly. She must have dozed off.
I'm coming.
A quick glance in the mirror. She had the flyaway sort of hair that always needed something done to it. She swiped at it, both hands, and palmed the door control. Pelly stood outside, looking worried.
You all right? You weren't at lunch, and now...
Another interview, and I wasn't really hungry anyway. I'm coming.
She wasn't hungry now, either, but skipping meals brought the psych nannies down on you, and she had no desire to be interviewed by yet another set of inquiring minds.